Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you want to stay up to date and you're away from the radio, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can stream anytime, anywhere. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. Glad that he is with us. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to all my co-hosts today, my company. He's the Grizzlies beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. He's also the co-host of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Episodes available every weekday wherever you get your podcasts. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at DeMichael C. DeMichael Cole, good day, sir.
What's going on, Jeffrey? How we doing?
How are we, my man? We're doing well. Happy Good Friday to all. I'm always reminded on Good Friday, I went to a Christian college that did not get Good Friday off. So that always kind of rubs me the wrong way. So
that was a thing.
Yeah, now you're supposed to celebrate the Lord the same every day. I feel like the day that he died on the cross for our sins a little different than the third Saturday in October. But again, we'll agree to disagree. Let's celebrate what we got coming up on the program. Of course, a big win tonight. You can hear it right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Grizzlies and Mavs, 8:30. Pregame will start at 8 o'clock. We'll have tip-off at 8:30 down at FedEx Forum. You can watch on ESPN. And I believe, I looked the other night, I think for play-in games, it's just the national broadcast.
Yeah.
I saw Rob tweeting that he's down at FedEx Forum, but
yeah, it's for the play-in games.
Yeah, I think play-in games is the exclusive, the SoFi. We got to make sure all our corporate partners are happy. We'll talk more about how that's going to be the way that it's going forward, so we'll discuss that probably during the list. But we'll start with the Grizzlies. Blake Topmeyer is going to join us here in about 30 minutes or so. We'll get his thoughts on everything that happened, all the developments with Nico. We'll also talk about a court case that has come across the wire that I think could really, I mean, I guess the good news is it could impact Dane Danger.
Yeah, that's the good news.
I think there's a chance.
There's
that,
a lot of bad with it too. But,
yes, yeah. I think it will officially be the it's on moment. I think I think a lot of people are already saying I'm already at that, but I'm like, if there's no longer eligibility, it's on.
Yeah.
It's just another sports league. So we'll talk about that. We will get into the list. We'll take a look also at the playoffs, the other series that will be starting this weekend. We'll tell your story, and then we'll get out of here. But I guess let's start with tonight, DeMichael, because the weird thing about when you think about the matchup with the Mavericks, I know we saw them on Sunday. They played a few guys that are probably going to play, but they're not going to play. They didn't play Anthony Davis. I don't think they played PJ.
Nope. None of those dudes.
Yeah, I think
Daniel Gafford probably was the most notable guy.
So Gafford, who will play. So we have not seen this iteration of the Mavericks because they have not played the Grizzlies with Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis has clearly been someone that has given the Grizzlies problems. Is that where tonight starts for you?
That's exactly where tonight starts. Anthony Davis has been, like you said, he's been a problem for the Grizzlies all the way back to 2023, pretty much the playoffs. When I talk about that Grizzlies-Lakers series,
yeah,
I always say Anthony Davis was the MVP of that series to me.
I agree. I mean, LeBron had the big moment with the layup, but
And, of course, you know, the Dylan Brooks-LeBron thing.
Yeah. When you just think about what went wrong in that series, to me, they couldn't stop Anthony Davis.
And it made you say, oh, if Steven Adams was here or Brandon Clark or whatever the case may be, that was the huge problem in that series. And he's continued to be a problem this season. When the Grizzlies played the Lakers, when Anthony Davis was there, there were three matchups. He missed one game. He played in two. You can guess which ones the Grizzlies won. You can guess the ones that
he lost.
I'm
going to say the one that he didn't play.
Yep.
And the two they lost were the two that he did play.
Most definitely. And he was a difference maker in all of those games. The good thing on the Grizzlies side was Zach Edey was also a difference maker in those games against the Lakers, to the point that it's funny because he's going to be the key again.
Yeah.
It's a different reason this time. The last time he was the key against Golden State, because you knew that Golden State would play small, they would space the floor out, and Zach Edey would have to play in space. This time, he's going to be going against other bigs, his physicality, staying out of foul trouble, because they're going to need him on the floor. They're going to need his rebounding. If Zach Edey isn't on the floor to rebound, this game could get real interesting.
Obviously, he's become, like, I guess, the closest thing the Grizzlies have to a lightning rod of takes.
Yeah.
Listen, do I wish that he would have a more developed and productive offensive game right now? Yes.
People forget that he's only been playing basketball organized for like probably 7-8 years at this point.
Well, also another part of this season's story is, you know, sometimes it was injury, but also the previous staff lost faith in him.
And he's been that Golden State game. He never used to close games.
No, and that was the other thing that like everyone. He obviously took a little beating from Chuck on the broadcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And then obviously there were a lot of takes just flying around. Like, that is the other thing that's annoying about playoff basketball. I always equate it to when my Giants suck and they have to play in a primetime game because everyone inevitably they're going to play primetime games because it's New York.
Yeah.
And even though, but there's nothing worse than having everyone just fly in and just comment on the team that you've been watching every single game. And you're like, listen, just let me be at noon with the Fox 4th broadcast. It's just like, let me be. Like, I know this team stinks. Like, I don't need your commentary of watching the third game of the year. But it was so obvious to me the only way that they were actually getting stops was if he would actually get a rebound.
Yeah.
Because if he wasn't in there, felt like Golden State was getting third chances, sometimes fourth chances. It was the only way to get a stop. But, I mean, I get it. Someone on Twitter actually wrote in, and I think this is probably fair.
Yeah.
His biggest problem is actually why he's good at basketball. He's so big that your eyes are just drawn to him.
Yeah.
Like, he is so massive. And so, therefore, like, anything he does, good or bad, you see it because you just can't look away. He's that massive.
Oh, yeah. Camera's on him a lot naturally. Just there's a lot of attention on him.
But, like, part of the reason why, because at first I thought if they got to this game, like, you know what? Put the bullet in my head. Like, let's just
get it over with.
Like, give Gladiator, give me the clean soldier's death. Like, I'll keep the draft pick, move on. But now you realize the path that the Grizzlies have that's the most likely to being better next year.
Yeah.
It's the old internal growth.
Yep.
Well, the other thing that you realize when you get into postseason basketball is the level of intensity, the fact that teams are game planning at a much more developed rate or a much more specific.
The energy is just different. And there's no plays off.
Those reps are, to me, way more valuable than just coasting off into the offseason, trying to work on your game. And so he's a big part of it.
Yeah.
Like, I find it hard to believe that going up against Anthony Davis isn't going to at least be useful to him.
Oh, for sure.
Even if you get beat. Like,
that's a huge part of this to me. Like, I want to see that because you need to see where he is in terms of his progression, in terms of being a key piece for you going forward. But going back to those games against the Lakers, like, those two losses, Zach Edey was a positive.
Yeah.
both times. And it was because when Anthony Davis was playing and Zach Edey was out of the game, it was child's play. It was easy. It was easy. It was just rebound, 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 double doubles. And then Zach Edey comes in the game. He's physical. He's 7'4". And he's moving Anthony Davis off his spots. And it brings me to this game. I'm curious to see how is Isolo going to approach this from the standpoint of, do you put Edey on Anthony Davis, which would put Jaren on Derek Lively, or do you just put Edey on Derek Lively and you put Jaren on Anthony Davis? But here's the thing. Against Golden State, Isolo said, basically, we didn't play Jaren Jackson Jr. on Jimmy Butler, which everyone right. thought made more sense just naturally. We didn't play Jaren Jackson Jr. on Jimmy Butler because of Jimmy Butler's ability to draw fouls.
Right.
Well, guess who can draw fouls?
That'd be Anthony Davis. Who draws them against Jaren, too?
Oh, it's clockwork every time. It's clockwork.
Yeah, I suspect you're probably going to see more of the – I think also it's kind of just like body type. It's like Davis is a bigger body, so I would assume you're going to put Edey on him.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like that's the other thing.
He's a better rebounder than Lively, too. I mean, Lively is a Lively body, but
– Yeah, I mean, I think also, like, the other problem that you started to see – I mean, there were people – like, Zach got into a little foul trouble, too.
He did, and he's prone to it.
Like, I do think that's actually what interests me more is how many guys are going to play.
Yeah.
And, honestly, probably which guys are going to play. Because I suspect, and you tell me if I'm wrong, we'll see the same starting five.
Uh-huh. I don't think so.
Okay, I guess no. Let's start with the obvious.
Yeah.
Bad hosting. Beyond Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
I think the most important question is John Morant.
For sure.
Is he playing?
Yeah.
And my gut says he's going to play.
Me too.
Okay, so then I guess we have to start with to what degree is he impactful? Because, I mean, you can shoot up the ankle. Like I presume. I presume, as Reggie Miller told us, he's gonna take his Advils.
Yeah,
and so you may not feel the pain.
This is an elimination game,
but you're still. Yeah. It's not like your ankle's not sprained, and so it does. Even though if you're not feeling the pain, there's
the mental part too.
100%, and especially with him.
Yeah, exactly.
And then does that impact how much he wants to?
Don't touch my ankle.
Exactly. Or does it affect him going into the paint?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's another thing about, obviously.
He's conscious of it.
Well, and then, I mean, that is kind of a bigger question with the Grizzlies. And this is why tonight kind of, I said this, and maybe I was wrong, but I mean, I have no idea. I would have preferred to play the Kings, even though I get it. The Kings have more firepower.
And Grizzlies would have scored 130 on them, yeah.
But to me, it was just a team that is so dependent on getting into the paint to score.
Yep.
Second I would rather league. Not see Anthony Davis.
That's exactly what it comes down to me. The Grizzlies' whole mentality is centered around paint scoring. They literally, at practices, when the Grizzlies are at practice, if you score at practice and you score without the ball touching the paint, it doesn't count. The ball has to touch the paint. Players have to touch the paint.
So it's kind of like the opposite of our Alabama guy, Nate Oates.
Yeah.
At practice, if you shoot, if it's not a layup or a dunk or a three, it doesn't count.
It doesn't count. Yeah. That same mentality. They were second in the league this year in paint points per game. There have been, I think.
And let me ask you this. Because I know you said that was always a big Taylor emphasis.
It was.
Is
Isolo doesn't emphasize it as much. That's the difference. He gave me I asked him about it.
Yeah.
And Taylor would never say this. This was one of those moments where you're like, okay, this is clearly a different coach here.
No, he doesn't. I honestly wonder though if it's.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly wonder if it's being European, where he's not trained in the American sports media, which is like give nothing. Like,
yeah,
he is just so truly blunt.
Yeah, I like it.
No, I agree.
I like it. And he said, if they take that away, well, guess what? There are other, when you take something away in the game of basketball, you're opening up something else. And that wasn't really, Taylor's mentality was always, we got to get out in transition, we got to score in the paint, or we're probably going to be in trouble. Isolo's saying, okay, you take away the paint, there's the mid-range, There's the three-point line. There's transition opportunities. There are other ways. You can't take away everything.
Sure.
And that's more of his mentality. I think Taylor was more of, okay, you might be good at that, but we're good at that too. So we'll just see. May the best win.
Okay, the only question I have is that bad? I'm not saying I agree.
For Isolo?
No, I agree with the philosophically.
Yeah.
I think he's right.
Yeah.
Like in the end, but I'm also like, I was trained to play quarterback where it's like, all right.
You play to your strengths.
Wherever, they're going to give you something.
Yeah.
They can't, either they load the box and you're going to have a one-on-one to the outside.
Yep.
Or they're going to have a light box, try to take away the throws, give it.
Give it to the running
back. They're going to give you something.
Yeah.
And so what I wonder, though, with the Grizzlies is, it seems obvious to me, Jason Kidd, I think, is a very good defensive coach.
Oh, yeah. He's locked into that side of the ball.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that they're going to dare the Grizzlies to shoot.
It makes a lot of sense because worry about anybody coming into your paint.
But, I mean, do you think right now the Grizzlies have enough shooting to win win that type of game?
Here's the thing. It's just one game.
I agree.
That's
they typically have, guys they shoot better at home. They have the firepower
to do it in one game.
Yeah.
If we're talking about a big sample size, win four games, I don't know. But Ja Morant shot over 40% from three-point range in the month of April. Desmond Bane is pretty reliable, consistent from three-point range. Jaren is where your streakiness comes in. Kennard. When he's shooting,
Well, that's part of the streakiness is
Scottie's been a really good three-point shooter. I was thinking about
this. Had Kennard's slump started before Taylor got fired?
Briefly. The offenses, are directly tied into the way he's been used. It's 100% of correlation, if that's what you're getting to.
Yeah, because to me, it seems like
he doesn't get the ball as much.
I think this style clearly works, obviously, better for Ja.
That's exactly
a score. It works better for Ja's score. I also think it gets Edie involved earlier, which I think is important. Mm-hmm. I honestly think it works better for Dez because I think Dez now, you and I talked about this in the summer.
Yeah.
How much we really wanted to get away from Dez being the second point guard.
Yeah. You see why a lot of times.
Correct. Man. Now that it's become, I don't think it's a seek, I don't think it's coincidence that Dez has shot the ball at a better rate recently. It's he's getting the more comfortable jump shots, catch and shoot threes. So I think it's worked for them. With Jaren.
No.
And I think also the thing is, it leads people to think because a lot of times he just winds up trying to go somewhere to create some space. So it looks like he's standing around, but I don't really think that's him not being active on the offensive end. I think that's just that's where he's supposed to be.
And there's the other part of it too with the higher emphasis on screen and rolls. Jaren's never been a really good roller.
No, it's the two-man game with Ja and Jaren's never really.
And it's
taken
it's
off.
Wild because they had a play against Golden State. He rolled to the basket, and it just looked. I'm like, man, we rarely see that. Ja threw him the lob, he caught it, finished it. It's we never see that because it's usually pick and pop with Jaren. And what you have with the truly best high IQ defensive players, Jimmy Butler, feasted on the fact that anytime Jaren put the ball on the floor, I'm coming. And it wasn't even just this game. I saw it in the last game, and I was like, they got to do something different with Jaren. And they did the same
thing. You can tell.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're the ones.
It was an emphasis.
But it does seem like in the last month, when Jaren puts the ball on the floor, an immediate double's coming.
Go get it.
Yep. Yeah. I definitely think you're right on that. And then, because that's the other thing. It's oftentimes when he puts the ball on the floor, he's putting the ball on the floor and he's going to the rim and he's not giving himself really the opportunity to pass out of it.
Yeah. And, the numbers have never indicated that he was going to be a good pass. He's always been below league average. And he took a step forward last year, but he's kind of trended back down a little bit this season. So that's the key area for Jaren. Everyone talks about the rebound. It gets the playmaking. It's his biggest weakness, in my opinion.
I was also thinking about this. Is it you'd rather have Ja and Dez, duh. Ja and Jaren, duh. We all acknowledge that.
Yeah.
But is there, I keep thinking that, all right, it's going to be up to a coaching staff to figure out.
Uh-huh.
Because it feels like there's a give and take. It's either you run a style that fits Jaren,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably not going to fit Ja.
Mm-hmm.
Or you run a style that fits Ja, that's not going to fit Jaren. Mm-hmm. Is this like a water and oil situation, or is it someone just hasn't figured out the right mix yet? Because, like, I don't want to act like
they're too good.
Figured out, coach. Like, I think they're all pretty smart. Like, yeah. I think they know, like, what they're doing. But, like, I do wonder if because the two-man game has just never been great, is that always going to be a struggle to figure out an offensive identity?
I don't think so, because at the end of the day, they're both really talented players. And it's one of those things where I always remind myself, basketball's a simple game, just like football. In a way, like you just said, you know, when you put 8 in the box,
yeah,
throw the ball. They got 7. It's a light box. Run it. At the end of the day, it's a very simple game. Of course, there are more complicated things within the intricacies of execution. But with Jaren and Ja, at the end of the day, I look at Jaren. He's one of the best isolation scorers in the entire league. He doesn't get a lot of those opportunities. But that's kind of how he's feasted over the last 3-4 years. It's just give me the ball and he goes one-on-one, and he dominates. Ja Morant is one of the best transition players in the league. He's one of the best paint-scoring point guards.
Finishers, yeah, I agree.
Exactly. So there is a pathway to the fact that Jaren isn't really, you know, starting a lot of his possessions with 2 feet in the paint. Ja Morant isn't starting a lot of his possessions with 2 feet in the paint. So you don't got to worry about the spacing thing, which is usually the big issue when you talk about can players coexist. It's a spacing question. I think they can. It's just finding the balance. And at the end of the day, their numbers overall are solid. Like, the Grizzlies' starting lineup this year had one of the best net ratings in the entire league. The two-man net rating numbers with Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. are fine. So, maximizing.
That was another thing that was obvious on Wednesday. And I get it. They're shorthanded without Brandon and Jaylen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, man, remember when, like, the Grizzlies would just wreck people with the second unit? And, like,
feels like a while ago.
I mean, that was the other thought that I had.
But, yeah.
You know, everyone always does the too young to win. And I think this is going to be something that's interesting with the Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes with the gift of, like, hindsight, you realize best shot might be when they are young.
It's never guaranteed.
Well, because for a couple of reasons. Number one, you don't have all the money tied up in your best players.
Yep.
And because of that, you usually have a deeper team.
Exactly.
And you can afford more things than other teams can do.
2011 Thunder all the way. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, like, you can, to me, like, always an interesting, because it was like, oh, they're not ready. It's like, sometimes, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, that's your best shot, because that's when you have the most amount of weapons. But I don't know, I guess that's kind of the other thing I kept getting back to. So if you think, so we're saying Ja's going to play, so you think that maybe we see a different starting lineup. What are you thinking that the changes could be?
Why not start Santi? You're going against a bigger team. They started Scotty because it was a smaller team. Santi's played the three a lot. It's not some out of the blue thing that you haven't done before. He's played the three. Quite frankly, in this matchup, like, we're talking about against Dallas, I'm terrified of Santi playing against a front court of Anthony Davis and Derek Lively and playing that power forward. So, to me, in this matchup, he fits better. He's going to be matched up against P.J. Washington, who also typically is a four. Santi, when he's playing the three, has been a really good rebounder for the Grizzlies this season.
It gives him some length.
Yeah.
He's always going to be longer usually than whoever's guarding him.
The biggest part is you don't have to worry about elite guards putting him on an island.
Yeah.
You got Najee Marshall and Klay Thompson. Neither of them are going to scare you with their isolation packages. You're not thinking, oh, snap, like, throw a double. Unless Klay's, like, you know, having one of those game six moments or something. But, yeah.
I mean, honestly, I was wondering, so if Klay shoots like he did on Wednesday, are they in trouble?
I mean, more than likely, it'll put them in a tougher spot, but I don't think they necessarily will be in trouble. The trouble would come if you're trying to play from behind to be too late into the game, because this Mavs team, what you can't take away from this, they're really good defense. If the Grizzlies are in this game in the closing minutes, I think it favors them easily, because what you'll have is the Mavs will be trying to play through Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis, when we talk about him over the history of his game. Everyone says that when he's aggressive, he's getting downhill, he's getting to the basket. That's MVP level Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
When he's settling for 18-foot mid-range jumpers, that's the Anthony Davis that makes people go, oh, like, he can be so much better than that. And quite frankly, on the offensive end, in that last game against the Kings, he settled for a lot of jumpers, which is why he shot 9 of 23. If he does that today against the Grizzlies, it's going to be a lot of happy people inside of FedEx Forum. So I think the big advantage for the Grizzlies in this game is you go into the fourth quarter, it's 92-92, or you're down 5, down even 7, I would say. You're in a good spot because who on Dallas really scares you as there's no Kyrie. There's no Luka.
Yeah.
I mean, Brandon Williams has been a nice story for them. You know, they say he's the best $47,000 ever spent in the league. He's a nice story. But I think that's the biggest area that favors the Grizzlies in this game is their guard play and the ability to finish.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I have the Anthony Davis heebie-jeebies.
I wouldn't blame you. We've seen it a lot.
It's just mainly, it's like, okay, how are they scoring on him? Because if we're talking about mid-range and threes.
On him is the key.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I get it. Like, and I understand, like you saw, like if they take that away, all right, we got to hit other things. But it's like, I don't really love the Grizzlies' chances in a jump shot contest. Mm.
But Dallas isn't, Najee Marshall's a 27% three-point shooter.
Well, let me rephrase it. I don't love the Grizzlies' chances if their offensive pass to victory is jump shot.
It's just jump shot. Okay. That's fair. That's been the weakness of them throughout their postseason runs. Obviously, that's the problem. That's why we've always talked about the half-court offense. And
it's why my biggest problem was last summer is if really your answer to half-court offense is scheme,
yeah,
I don't think that's ever going to
last.
We talked
about that.
Like, it just... this isn't even revisionist history. Mm-hmm. I had problems with it. All right, what else are you looking at? Or are you thinking about?
I mean, the Brandon Williams kid is good. And he's been solid for them. And the thing, if you go back to the game, two games ago against the Mavs, the Grizzlies played a close game. Most of the Grizzlies starters were playing. I believe it was Ja, Dez, Jaren. Those guys were active. And they were playing a Mavs team. No Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
No Gafford or Derek Lively at the time. Like, it was a makeshift roster. If you go back and look at that game, Brandon Williams was keeping the Mavs in that game. And to me, when you talk about defensively with the Grizzlies, front court defense isn't really an issue in this game. I think they'll be fine for the most part, as long as those guys stay out of foul trouble. But when you talk about the weakness, without Jalen Wells, after trading Marcus Smart, perimeter defense, they get beat off the dribble from time to time. The Mavs don't have, naturally, a lot of guys who can really destroy you off the dribble. Brandon Williams has the potential to be that guy. He's coming off the bench, but he's playing a lot of minutes. And against the Sacramento Kings, and that, I think it was the second quarter, he was huge for them.
Okay, so then if they do indeed go big, because I think even Tomas mentioned like having to perhaps maybe go bigger because of that.
Yeah, I think you got to start Santi for me.
So – we definitely think Scotty's going to play.
For sure.
I would presume Luke's going to play.
Yeah.
At least I feel
he'll be in there. He'll get a chance, you know, I think.
Yeah, I'm not saying they wouldn't pull the plug, but I think they would at least like
the three-point shooting aspect that you mentioned.
Well, and there is like a certain level of okay, he still knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's been here.
Like, it seems to me when the fastest way to the bench with this team is if, like, you just clearly are out of position.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have enough. Like, because I think a big reason why Conchar played is, like, even if Conchar's not the best one-on-one defender, he's always at least where he's supposed to be.
Oh, for sure.
Like, he doesn't have the defensive bust.
Yeah.
Whereas Vince, on the other hand, I don't know if it's because he's overplaying. I don't know if it's because he's overthinking.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels like a lot of times he gets out of position.
Yeah.
Who else do you think, like, I guess that's the question. Like, how many guys do you actually think they're going to play tonight?
8.5 is usually what I call it. You play 9 in the first half, and if that 9 is good, if that 9 guy's good, then he plays in the second half. If he's not, then you shorten it to 8. We just talked about the starters. Scotty, I think Luke, and I think Santi.
Yeah.
That's your pretty much firm guys. You got Vince, you got John Conchar. These are guys who could potentially make an impact. They'll probably get an opportunity. They'll get thrown out there.
Yeah.
Let's see how they do. And in John Conchar's case against Golden State, he made a positive impact. And what did they do? They kept him in there for a longer stretch. In Vince Williams' case against Golden State,
he made a very negative impact.
He made a very negative impact. And he played 2 minutes. That was it. Came out, didn't come back in.
Here's the pine, young man. All right, we'll keep previewing it during hour number two. When we come back, let's welcome Blake Topmeyer to the program. We'll get his thoughts on Nico's decision to leave Tennessee, as well as this court case that I got my eyes on and what it could possibly mean for the state of college athletics, air quotes. We'll do that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different, good different. Try something that feels like you, you know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, episodes available each and every week. He's serving up his best SEC takes along with his co-host, John Adams. He's on Twitter, on X, at BTopmeyer. All right, Blake. I saw Lane Kiffin on Theo Von's podcast said he doesn't really know. He's wondering about the other side of the Nico story. So I guess let's lay it out. What do you think actually happened?
I think Nico's wanted more, or Nico's camp.
Yeah, I guess we should say Team Nico.
Yeah, Team Nico has, I think, wanted more out of Tennessee for many months now. And when I say more, I think combination of money and more talent around him, more weapons around him. And I don't really think they got either of what they wanted on either front. I don't think Tennessee upgraded its wide receivers enough to the liking of Team Nico. I don't think they upgraded the payday enough to their liking, and so they wanted more, and I think Tennessee felt kind of leveraged to the point where, especially on the financial front, they didn't want to give more. And I think Nico in his camp miscalculated when Nico skipped practice on Friday. I mean, at that point, there's really no path to stay at Tennessee. I mean, it's, as I've said, like we've all gone through these situations where you've negotiated a raise at work, and maybe that goes your way, maybe it doesn't, maybe it takes a while as negotiations are ongoing, and it can get a little tense at times, right? But you're still showing up to work every day while you're hammering this out. If you just stop showing up to work, your problem is not going to be not getting a raise. Your problem is going to be you're not going to have a job. And I think the real issue for Nico was not only did he stop showing up to work at Tennessee, so that closes that door, but he didn't have another offer like clearly in hand, not a superior offer anyway. I mean, you know, according to all reports and all logic, he could go to UCLA and take a pay cut. But that's not a better situation than what he would be leaving. I don't care what narrative his camp will try to spin. UCLA is not a better situation than what he walked away from at Tennessee. So, you know, from really every turn here, I think the Iamaliava camp overplayed their hand. But I don't see this as a win for Tennessee either. Like,
yeah, I agree.
Got worse when Nico walked out the door, and Nico's situation got worse when he walked out the door. This is a loss for everybody involved.
Yeah, because to me, I think Team Nico made two critical errors, and I agree with you about the not showing up. Like, that was, man, if you didn't have a deal in place and you do that, that's like one of the worst business moves you could possibly make. But I also think they miscalculated. I think they thought they were going to use the second short transfer window as leverage. Like, to me, everything kind of suggests they were just trying to put the screws to Tennessee, but they really probably planned on still being at Tennessee. And then Tennessee said, we're good here. Like, we think it's fair. Like, we're moving on. And we wish you well, you know, the old WWE, you know, future endeavors. But the other mistake I thought they made was if they do this in January, you can still have SEC teams, because at the price that they wanted, there's just not that many schools outside of the SEC that are that insane and are willing to get into like that kind of bidding war. And to me, that was the big miscalculation.
I absolutely agree. I had a column today laying out, you know, the four negotiation missteps that he made, and we covered a couple of them already. But this is another big one here. As I put it, he didn't strike when the iron would have been hottest. And you make a good point with he's taking some potential bidders off the table by transferring in this window. He cannot play this season if he goes to another SEC school. If he would have transferred in the winter window, he could have transferred to another SEC school and played this season. So he removed half the market, but also he removed more than half the market, because by waiting until this window, even outside the SEC, a lot of schools have already committed the resources that they're going to commit to the quarterback that they've decided is going to be their starter this season. If they would have had a chance to bid on Nico in December, in early January, maybe they would have said, yeah, we're going to anoint this guy to be our starter. But now that you've committed some resources to a guy, now that you've gone through spring practice with your guy you've designated with as QB1, like, you have to decide, like, as a school, are we going to do an about face and bring some guy in late April, you know, 4 months before the season, to learn a new system, to assimilate to a new roster? Oh yeah, he's also got some baggage and some reputational damage, and we're going to embrace all that 4 months before the season starts and commit some serious financial resources. Like, you're right. I mean, of all the mistakes he made, and there are a few, this is a big one. He should have, if he was going to do this, and I know it's a time crunch, but the portal was open after Tennessee's playoff loss. So it wouldn't have required him to do this before Tennessee's season ended. Their season ended, the portal was still open.
Yeah.
He could have gone in December and then made his decision in January. He would have had a much more favorable market, many more options, and he probably could have got something closer to this $4 million figure that's being reported that he wants. I don't know if he would have got $4 million, but he would have had one heck of a lot better chance to get something closer to that. Not only the dollar figure, but a better landing spot than what he's dealing with now. I think this is a big lesson to starting quarterbacks. If you're going to transfer, best to do it in the December window.
What's going on, Blake? It's DeMichael.
Hey, DeMichael.
I got a quick one for you. With the quarterback position now at UT, that you got two quarterbacks, right? So you just mentioned that a lot of schools have kind of already allocated their resources for the quarterback position. What type of position does that put Tennessee in now? Because clearly they're going to address the quarterback position, but is there a true, I guess, way for them to get back into that top contender category by trying to go get a quarterback this late into the process who's probably going to, you know, just go through fall camp and potentially be your guy in the fall?
Yeah, it's a really tough situation for Tennessee. And I think, you know, Vols fans are navigating this like a coaching search, right? I mean, you go through a coaching search and you think, well, we're going to hire John Gruden or whoever your white whale is for that particular school. And then you realize, oh, wait a second, we're not getting the white whale, but we're still getting a pretty darn big, tasty fish. Mm-hmm. And then you're left with you know, some little fish the size of your hand at the end of it, and you're figuring out how the heck did we wind up with this? And I think that's kind of the situation Tennessee's finding themselves in with this quarterback search is, you know, I mean, we can come up with all the wish list names and say like, oh, Tennessee's got a money with them, right? But they're getting paid at the schools where they're at. And okay, maybe Tennessee can throw a few more shekels their way, but that's also requiring a starting quarterback to do what Nico did, walk away from his team, walk away from his starting spot, walk away from the offense and the coach and the teammates that he knows, and make this big gamble of going to a new program, new coach, new system 4 months before the season starts. And you know, whatever Tennessee is going to pay him, let's say Tennessee could throw $3 million at a guy. Well, again, it's not $3 million versus zero. Those frontline starters are getting paid, you know, some pretty good bucks for where they're at right now. So it is a tough situation. I mean, it only takes one, but I do think it's really hard to pry a guy loose at this point. A guy who's a bona fide QB1 at a Power 4 school, those guys I think are really hard to pry loose. And the other part of this equation is Josh Heupel's offense is not that easy to learn. Yeah. In a 4 month period of time. I mean, the tempo of that, if you're a quarterback who's not accustomed to playing at that tempo, and now you come into Tennessee and you're operating one of the fastest offenses in the country, I mean, you have to be an incredibly high processor. That offense puts a lot of the decision making on the quarterback. I mean, we've seen it with Nico, right? I mean, he didn't start as a true freshman. And, you know, we saw Hendon Hooker. He was better in year two as a starter in Heupel's system than he was in year one. I mean, I just think if you're comfortable in the system where you're at, to ask you to go to Heupel's system, which is a very quarterback-friendly system, I should say, but having to learn that tempo in 4 months, if you're not used to it, that can be really hard. And so, you know, Tennessee fans now I see they're looking at, you know, Steve Angeli, the former Notre Dame backup quarterback who's in the portal. And I guess if it's just like, go get the best man available. I mean, as we sit here today, as far as guys that are actually in the portal, Angeli's probably the best man available, but like he wasn't operating any.
I was going to say, I mean, that's the other, like the Heupel part of this is interesting to me because on the one hand, yeah, you're going to get your little pop from everybody right now going, yeah, good for him. Like you stood up to the shakedown. Like you said, we thought we had a fair deal. Like you stood your ground, yep. And everybody's going, yay. But you get to next fall.
You lose some games.
And you start losing 3-4 games. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying Nico's going to go out and like tear it up at UCLA. But if you go and you look and you see like part of the reason why Tennessee's losing games is because like they don't have a quarterback. Whoo, boy, you just like really expedited a hot seat.
I totally, totally agree. I mean, you know, Tennessee fans were, and even some media types were rushing to put Urban Meyer in a coffin after he basically.
I mean, that's the thing. I can't believe I'm saying this. I agreed with Urban Meyer.
Yeah, when he said Tennessee is basically up a river without a paddle here. By saying farewell to Nico, and hey, I agree with Urban. Like, I mean, yeah, it's great to win the press conference in April, but what does that get you in September? It gets you a squat. I mean, the same Tennessee fans that were stumbling over themselves to pat Josh Heupel on the back for winning the PR battle, they're going to be the same fans booing if they lose to Mississippi State or Arkansas next season, right?
Absolutely.
know, I mean, we've all seen this, and this is not just Tennessee. I mean, they're the one in the spotlight now, but any school in the SEC, right? Like, you win the press conference in April, that means squat in the fall. And if it comes down to Tennessee going 7-5 this season because they don't have a quarterback, yeah, I mean, your moral high ground is not going to be worth anything. And Josh Heupel is going to be facing questions of why couldn't you keep your starting quarterback? Why were you left with what you were left with? Why couldn't you, you know, make chicken salad out of chicken poo? That's going to be a tough situation for him to be in. So he made his choice, and I'm not saying it's a wrong choice. I mean, at some point, I do think you got to draw a line in the sand, and guys can't skip practice. They can't skip the spring game. You can't be having, you know, holdouts, and especially he doesn't have another offer in hand. Like, well, who are you bidding against? You know, I'm not saying that he shouldn't have drawn a line in the sand, but I do think, like, was there not some middle ground that could be found here? And maybe there wasn't. You know, maybe the Nico camp just was not budging off what it wanted, and Tennessee, you know, didn't feel like it was responsible to get there or couldn't get there. Maybe there was no middle ground to find. But when you don't keep him, you better get somebody on the back end and win some football games in the fall, because, winning an April press conference means nothing.
Well, but I mean, also think about it. We keep saying, all right, you know, go get best available Power Four, but we're really saying best available outside of the SEC. Like, you can't go, like, you're not going, you know, you're not going and taking someone else's quarterback within the league, something you probably could have done if this situation happens in December. Okay, you can go take, but I'm racking my brain, because there's also the part of, like, all right, how many teams are running some variation of the old, it's like the veer and shoot, you know, it's the Baylor offense. I mean,
that kind of lessens your prospects.
I mean, I think there's also this other question. It's like, how many other good quarterbacks are outside of this league? I'm not saying this league's the only league with good quarterback play, but what I am saying is this is the league that pays the most. Across the board.
I'm not saying – I don't think Tennessee is going to get this guy. But I'm not saying – this guy maybe isn't even on the radar. But as we're describing this, who could walk in here from another conference that's a pretty good quarterback that knows this system? Luke Altmyer at Illinois. He's not running this system at Illinois, but Ole Miss runs basically the Josh Heupel offense.
They're the only other name. I don't hate that one, honestly, though. But, like, this doesn't seem like a guy that would kind of go and quit on it. Like, Luke's the same thing. Like, I don't think Luke's wired to, like, going to quit. But, like, I was thinking, like, why would you not go and throw $2 million at Haynes King? Like, it's going to be more of the running style, but, like, I know he's not going to be the vertical passer that you're – but it's like, you're really at this point, it's like, how many real options are out there?
No, I agree. And Haynes King, it would look different, but he can run around a little bit. And that might be the best case scenario, because as we know, but sometimes it gets kind of clouded as, like –
I thought of another one. But I don't think he's going to quit on his team. Sam Levitt.
Oh, no. Yeah, that one.
But I don't think he quit on his team.
I don't think so. That one's fantasy land to me. But Haynes King's a good one, I think, because, like, I think that's an intriguing one. I think you have to stomach the reality of, he's not going to be Hendon Hooker.
Right.
But if with this tempo offense, and we know Josh Heupel usually has a pretty good run game, right? It's kind of a myth that it's just the quarterback throwing it 50 times a game. It's not.
No, more times than not, it ends up being 60-40 run.
Yeah,
it is a run-first offense, and I do think there's some advantages to it of having a quarterback who can run. I mean, we saw that with Hendon Hooker a couple years ago, and Hendon could sling it too, but he could run it. Going back to Drew Locke at Missouri with this offense, he could run it a little bit. I mean, Haynes King's probably a better runner than, I don't know about Hendon, but Haynes King's right up there as a runner. He can run it around. It would look different with someone like him. You're not going to be taking the top off the defense probably all that much, but I don't know that you got the wide receivers to do that anyway with this group, quite frankly. That might be the best case scenario, if not him, someone like him that can learn the tempo and also can run around and give you some quarterback run game. That does put some pressure on a defense.
All right, so changing topics a little bit. Matt Winter, at Winter Sports Law. He put this out about, it was right around lunchtime. Sounds like a federal judge in New Jersey is strongly considered granting a preliminary injunction that would prohibit the NCAA from enforcing its five-year eligibility rule. We'll find out next week. This case seeks to address an issue the NCAA skirted in its Diego Pavia waiver. So what we've also seen is if one injunction happens, it just becomes law. Like it's a blanket thing of, all right, even if it's just this one specific thing, it applies to everyone. I also think that this is, I've been telling you, I think for like 18 months, I think the next thing to get challenged is eligibility. Because in the end, I don't see how it's not a non-compete. In the end, it's someone saying, this is a rule, you have this amount of time, but if I'm a student in good standing, doesn't matter at what level, why am I not eligible? Like, I guess, I wonder, could this also apply to Tennessee? Is there someone out there? I know Lane said Jackson tried to get another year.
Yeah.
But like, I also don't know, is it too late to withdraw from the NFL? Like, or are we going to say that, hey, the rule... He was only in the NFL draft because he didn't think he had eligibility. He would have had eligibility. Therefore, you can't penalize him for going into the draft. Like, could that open up someone?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to get some answers pretty quickly to get it done for this year, right? I think you're up against it, I think, a little bit to have that Hail Mary. Although I will say, I believe Tennessee's backup quarterback from last season, Gaston Moore.
Yeah,
he still has another year of eligibility, if I'm not mistaken. He had the COVID year. Yep. He had a redshirt year. I mean, he would be a 6-year senior, but he's got another year of eligibility. I think he's just floating around out there. This was a guy who followed Heupel from UCF to Tennessee. He was a walk-on, a preferred walk-on. Who knows the system? He was QB2 last year. I mean, Tennessee's thinking about, you know, thinking about the possibility of Jake Merklinger as a starter, redshirt freshman who was QB3 last year, was behind Gaston Moore. Now, part of that was because Merklinger was a true freshman. But, yeah, I mean, if you're kind of striking out with guys that you want, I think you have to look at the guy who's been with Heupel for 5 years and could come back as a 6-year senior as giving you a third option at least to look at. I mean, that's not the ideal outcome here for Tennessee, but it's better than nothing.
Or do you play the freshman and go, yo, it's the young quarterback, you know, like if you're trying to buy some cover.
Here's the problem with that, though. If you put the true freshman out there and he struggles, you know, maybe through no fault of his own, he's just a true freshman, he's not ready, that cranks up the heat on Josh Heupel, because then it's like, can this guy recruit? What's going on here? You know, is he maybe really not the quarterback savant that we all thought he was? And I don't know that I would buy any of those narratives, but that's where it goes if you put a guy out there who's not ready and he struggles, is that boomerangs back on the coach. And it's like, oh my gosh, maybe the thing that we thought this guy was good at, quarterback development, maybe he's not as good as you thought. And maybe the concerns you had all along about his recruiting are coming true. So that would be a really, I think it's the opposite of with Billy Napier last year. Like, Billy had to get DJ Lagway onto the field.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it took an injury to Graham Mertz for Billy to realize that.
Graham was playing great football.
Yeah, it was playing pretty good.
I mean, that is kind of sad. It's like, because remember when we were talking, like, we were kind of like talking, like, which quarterbacks are good? Because we were like, I don't know. It's like, I kind of at the point where I trust Graham Mertz. That was a difficult place to be.
Yeah, does Graham Mertz have any eligibility left? I don't know that he does.
I mean,
but like you said, eligibility might be like a relative term now.
Yeah, I mean, like that is like another thing that I have. Like, I just keep wondering if we're going to get to November and we're going to realize, like, man, they should have worked this out. Because it feels like to me, when you look at it right now, no one's going to be happy. Like, Nico's playing at a worse school on a worse team. And I know it's fun to say Nico stinks.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon a dismal day, Bob's ice cream van looked gloomy and gray. Although he had big ambitions, his socials lacked creative vision.
That bad?
Maybe vamp it up a tad?
I have an idea.
Bob launched Canva and got into gear.
Create the video in the vampire theme and make it the funniest meme.
It went viral. Bob's business, a revival. Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.